Good evening, everyone, and welcome. We're just about a minute away from jumping on this call. Tonight we're going to be talking about the first quality of an intentional creator, connecting with people. Looking forward to this discussion. Before we begin, we have just a moment. Is there anyone that would like to ask a question before we begin this process this evening? Okay, let's officially begin our call. It's Tuesday night. We've had an opportunity over the last several weeks to go through each of the qualities of an intentional creator, and tonight we get to begin at the beginning. This is a very exciting time. I love this subject. Oh, my goodness. We'd like to welcome all of those who are with us for the first time. We have several new people tonight who are joining us, who are just going through this process. Welcome to the program. We've had everybody can come off of mute at any time. Press star 6 if you come on and there's noise in the background. You want to come off, just press star 6. Just say, Dave, 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 catch my attention. We'll stop any time mid-sentence for you to ask a question. This is a coaching session for you. And when we have an opportunity to share and we open up the lines for that purpose, I would encourage you to come on and share your experiences so that we can bless the lives of all of those on the phone. We have probably close to 60 or 70 people on the call tonight, so you want to jump on really quickly if you've got something you'd like to share. And as we've said before, when you do, if it's a question or a challenge or a success story, just trust that if your heart's kind of beating a little extra, it's probably important that you share it. Every time someone has shared in this call, it has truly blessed the lives of the other listeners. Well, welcome. My name is Dave Blanchard. I've had the privilege for the last 10 years of working with Og Mandino's material. I want to make something really clear tonight before we begin. I have the privilege of being the CEO, but with that comes absolutely no license to be perfect. I have a lot of my own stuff I'm working on all of the time. I just want you to know that. Sometimes it's painful, and especially as we go into this section on connecting with people. There are times when we have so much on our plates, so much going on in our minds, that we can hurt people, we can crush people. I know that I can, and I know that I have. This conversation tonight is not about doing this the way I do it, or try to do it as good as I do it. It's for me to share with you what I've learned in terms of connecting with people and in terms of Og Mandino's material. And I do know this, that when I apply these principles, they work. When I don't, life is not nearly as joyful. So as we go through this process tonight, let's not do so based on, gosh, I wish I could do it like that. Don't even go there. Because when we make the conscious decision to even consider going here and stepping into someone's world, actually noticing another human being, we do something that's quite rare. There's a lot of lip service about how much we love people and care about people. Our love is evidenced on whether or not we truly can feel what another person's experiencing. And when we're insensitive to that, we're missing great opportunities. When we are, something very precious happens. I'll do my very best tonight to share it with you. Pull out a paper and a pen. Get ready to take notes. Many of you have the coaching programs open in your tools. You should have at least the 6 qualities available to be on this call so that you can go and listen to this section. That was the homework assignment last week, to listen to the sections on connecting with people. That's walls of resistance, empathy, intuition, intrinsic validation, 1 and 2, and partnership. I'm going to go through about half of that tonight, and we'll see how far we can get, because we're going to spend a couple of weeks on this topic, just in sharing the principles, and then having you share your experiences implementing and applying these principles in your life. Well, here's the bottom line, everyone. We live in a world where almost categorically, that means almost everyone, is focused on themselves. When they see someone frown, they want to know what they did to make them frown. When somebody gets frustrated, they want to know, why did I create that frustration? Everything circles around us. That's true for almost every human being. We drive down the road, we connect with other, we're in association with other people, and we're wondering, what are they thinking about me? And seldom, and hopefully more frequently after tonight, do we shift and wonder what pain they might be having in their life. And if we think we're having the most pain, we may be focusing on, yeah, why didn't they? When every one of us, all of us, have the responsibility and the blessing and the opportunity to focus on the needs of another person. Harvey Schoaf, co-developer of the assessment that we're working on, said, we'd be less concerned about what other people think about us if we knew how little they actually do. Just a true statement. So, why do all of this? Why try to figure this out? Ogg tells us in scroll number 2 that this is the greatest secret of success in all ventures. The greatest secret. He goes on to say at the end of scroll 2, he says, with this, I will increase my sales 100-fold to become a great salesman. Politically correct, it should be salesperson. If I have no other qualities, I can succeed with love alone. It's a very special kind of love called agape love. Without it, I will fail, though I possess all the knowledge and skills of the world. I'll greet this day with love, and I will succeed. Agape love. He's basically saying that if we truly want to succeed at a very high level, that we're going to want to acquire the skill of agape love. Agape is Greek. It's translated in the English as charity. In the Greek, it means a heightened level of awareness. It means stepping back and seeing another person the way God sees them. Now, that's quite a task. Without judgment, that's quite a task. I don't know about you, but there are times when I get my buttons pushed. It's really hard. But when we can see somebody the way God sees them, unconditionally, we just can't be offended. Boy, it'd be nice if we could be in that space all the time. How about you? Where you just can't be offended. No matter what anybody does, it's not personal. That's hard for me at times. Really hard. How about you? But that's where we want to eventually get. Hogg tells us when we finally get here, our name will be raised high on the pyramid of life. And I can only name a handful of people I'd put on that pyramid. And I can tell you unequivocally, I'm not one of them. So let's walk through these principles. Because if this is how we succeed, and I'm going to tell you before we begin, it's counterintuitive. In other words, your intuition or the world says do it this way. This is counter to the way we're taught to do things. It doesn't make sense until you practice it, when you can. Very first principle, it's called walls of resistance. It means that almost everybody has a wall around them. Ogg talks about it in Scroll 2, a wall which they built around their hearts because of hate and suspicion. Something's happened in their life. They've lost trust in people for whatever reason. They've been ripped off or scammed or been in a bad relationship or abused as a child, whatever it might be. And as a result, they built a wall around them. The truth is, almost everybody has one. I've shared on this call that I've seen a couple places where this does not exist, not to the same extent. I've watched, as we're working on our alcohol program, two alcoholics sit down to talk. And they have a tremendous ability to step into each other's worlds very quickly without these initial walls, because they have so many similar and really tragic experiences. They go very deep very quickly. It's wonderful to watch. But for most of us, we don't have that kind of an association with people. Now, this was measured, this wall that we have around us was measured by Dr. Robert Hartman, and he discovered that behind this wall is our cooperation and productivity. It's our genius. It's what we bring to the world. And he discovered that in a non-adversarial relationship, that's like a husband and wife, as co-workers that like each other, that even in that relationship, a person is holding back 40% of their cooperation and productivity until they've been valued as a human being, intrinsically valued, until they know that they are seen. Remember the movie Avatar, I See You? If you go back and watch that movie and you see all of the energy that goes behind that, I see you, I really see you. And I'm creating a safe place for you. When we do that, the wall comes down. But in a non-adversarial relationship, we have 40% of a person's cooperation and productivity behind the wall. I've often thought in corporate America, where intrinsic validation is just really rare, employees are often just treated like cogs in a wheel. They're just robots. They just do the work. How much ability, cooperation, productivity is out in the cars in the parking lot? People come in and go through the motions and go home, often for a paycheck and more often for health insurance benefits. That's about it. That's not true of everywhere, but it is pretty widespread, and it's sad. In a relationship at home, husband and wife, committed companions, we walk in and we just want to dive in with our issues or vent or whatever the case may be. How often do we stop and step into that person's world and take down their wall before we throw up all over them? Are we just a big barf party all the time? Or do we care enough to notice that there is a wall? So your first assignment this week is to know that every single person has a wall, almost without exception. No matter where you go, no matter who you talk to, just know there's a wall. And your very first assignment will be to apply these principles that we're going to learn tonight, some of them, to take the time to take the wall down before we share what is on our mind. Because if we just start sharing, we're often throwing up on someone's wall. And if we're personally attacking in the process, then that wall just gets higher and higher and higher. And nobody can get in. Because generally we get defensive when we start hurling rocks over the wall back at the person. Or if we're trying to sell somebody something, and we're so excited, we're just blah, blah. It splashes back on us. It tastes awful. It's called rejection. It's very common. It's one of the greatest destroyers of enthusiasm for a business where sales is required. It's not that the person rejects us. It's just that we're throwing up on their wall. That's all. We didn't care enough to take it down, or we didn't know how. Well, we're going to start learning in the next 2 weeks how to do that. So we don't do any more throwing up on people. Now, it's not going to happen every time, but more frequently. We want to stop throwing up on people. So just know that's the first principle. Everybody's got a wall. And to get frustrated, as it says in the material, is like getting angry the sun comes up. It's going to come up. It's just what it does. Everybody's going to have a wall. That's just human nature. We do not want to get frustrated with basic human nature. Everybody has a wall. If everybody has a wall, and we want to connect with the person behind the wall, then we'll want to take the wall down. And there are two tools that we use for this purpose. Principle number two, empathy and intuition. Empathy and intuition. Now, Og says we can take down that wall with a sledgehammer. He says muscle can split a shield and even destroy life. Yeah, we can be forceful. We can be angry and bitter, and yeah, we can use a sledgehammer on everyone. But he says Muscle can split a shield and even destroy life, but only the unseen power of this agape love, this being able to see that person as priceless, can open the hearts of men. And until I master this art, I will remain no more than a peddler in the marketplace. Now, some of you have felt that. You know what it feels like to come home trying to take down somebody's wall with a sledgehammer, and you feel kind of icky, and you want to take a shower. Because I will make love, this agape love, seeing them, really seeing them, my greatest weapon, and none on whom I call can defend against his force. He says, my reasoning they may counter, my speech they may distrust, my apparel they may disapprove, my face they may reject, and even my bargains may cause them suspicion. Yet my love will melt all hearts like unto the sun, whose rays soften the coldest clay. I've often thought about that phrase. Og could have said that you can melt all cold hearts, but he's a little bit more poetic. All hearts like unto the sun, whose rays soften the coldest clay. Well, let's talk about this empathy, this tool that we're going to use to take down this wall of resistance. We're not going to do it with a sledgehammer. We're not going to do it with a jackhammer. We're going to do it with agape love, a heightened level of awareness. It is a great weapon. You can't use it to manipulate someone because you actually have to care. And when you care, you can't manipulate. You got to be deadly honest. You just have to be honest. Now, let's talk about empathy. Empathy, interestingly, comes from all of your life experiences, particularly the most painful and awful of all those experiences. Imagine. I want you to ponder for just a moment and think about some of the things that have happened to you over the course of your life. Just ponder for a moment without going back and reliving the events. Just ponder what happened as a child. Anything happened for you? Your teenage years? Anybody hurt your feelings? Did you lose anything? We've got a new coach that's starting with us in June who was an Olympic diver. She represented the Canadian dive team. Amazing human being. Just a fun, fun lady. She got to the Olympics. To the Olympics. And was there at the Olympics performing, her whole life of preparation for that moment. And when she dove, she hit her head on the board. And her dive career was over. Done. Wow. Well, it wasn't life-threatening for her, fortunately. But it was career-ending. I remember when I stopped playing college football and I go back to the high school team, high school place, 10 years later, there were still guys trying to work out to go try out for a pro team who didn't even start when they played college football. They couldn't let it go. Some people have lost millions of dollars, and it doesn't matter how much it is. It's just if it's everything. It's all relative. Tremendous losses. Many have gone through very painful divorces. Oops, we're getting an echo. Could everybody press *6? That would be really helpful. Just press *6 on your phones, if you will, and that should eliminate our echo. Good, I think we got it. Thank you so very much. So just go back and reflect on what has happened to you. What has happened to you? There's a story in the material called The Chicago Dream. It's a true event. It happened in Chicago, a place where I'd spent my early years of my childhood. I was there speaking. And I had a very profound dream. It was profound to me because I learned some great lessons in that dream. I'm going to share with you the principles. You can go back and listen to the dream because it would take up a great deal of our call tonight. The bottom line in the dream is that we drag things in this sack we call life. all this stuff that's happened to us, that we've done or has been done to us, we just drag it around with us everywhere we go. Woe is me. Wow, that was hard. Oh, look at the terrible things that I'm struggling with. And we just drag it and drag it and drag it. It wears us out. And it impacts our ability to connect with other people, to really see what's going on in their life, really see. And then the time comes that we decide to finally take on what's in that sack. We empty it, we look at it. We take each one of those items and we study it. We don't want to relive horrible circumstances, but we certainly want to remember what it felt like. And what I want you to write down tonight as you're going through and you reread, go back and listen to Empathy, Intuition, listen to the Chicago Dream. And when you do, this is where I want you to focus. Life cannot shift at all until we ask a fundamental question about our own experiences. And here it is. I wonder if anyone else is having this experience. I wonder if anyone else is having this experience. That question will cause us to look up and look out at the world. And if we start looking, we're going to see, oh my goodness, we're going to see things we never saw before. We take this experience now and we engrave it on our heart. What that means is, we bring that experience, the memory of the feeling of what it was like to be there. We bring it with us in our sojourn as we're walking through life. And it reminds us, as we see someone's gait, how they're walking, their posture, their dialogue, the words they use. I know this place. Oh my goodness. I know this place. And we can ask questions that no one else would ever think to ask. Now, if someone's having an experience we've never had before, we may have no frame of reference. It may go right by us. But if we know that place, we can ask some very interesting questions that only someone would know to ask. Who's been there? I find this experience frustrating when I'm working with our alcohol program because I've never been an alcoholic. I don't know what it's like. I'm trying to understand. I can understand medically and in theory, but I have never been there. So I don't know the questions to ask an alcoholic. That's why an alcoholic has to ask those questions of an alcoholic. They're the only one who knows, really knows. What questions to ask? Now, if I'm talking to someone who's lost millions of dollars and been burdened for years paying it back, I know exactly what to ask. Exactly. If it matches my experience or anything even close to it. And it's been my experience, we often have people put on our path who are having similar experiences. People we can serve. Now here's the wonderful gift. We wrote about this, it's in the material, and Kevin Hall in his book Aspire allowed us to put this quote in here. I was just really pleased he did. He's a master on this topic, empathy. Empathy on someone else's path. We truly are on their path. He says, he wrote from the material we've written, our character has been forged in the furnace of adversity. Anybody been there? Anybody had adversity in their life? Our character is forged in that furnace. We know what pain feels like. We cannot change the past. Some people keep wanting to go back to when the stock market was healthy and they could sell their stocks and come out okay. Can't do it. They want to go back and say something different to a person or wish that, you know, we want to go back. We cannot go back. We cannot change the past. However, we can choose to use these reference points, these experiences, as a rich resource to assist us in better understanding and connecting with people. When we use our life experiences in the service of others, we will finally find purpose in our suffering, joy in our journey, and much-needed healing in our souls. And oh, so true. Bottom line is that in terms of connecting with people, which is the secret to success in all ventures, pretty important thing, that the greatest asset you have is all of that crap that's happened to you. Og talks about this in Scroll 8, where we plant this seed, us, in the darkness of the soil. And he says that the darkness of the earth and my failures, my despairs, my ignorance, my inabilities are the darkness in which I'm planted in order to ripen. So we're growing from it too. And now we get to use these experiences to assist us in better serving another person. Because when we come to a person and we know where they are, they don't know we know. But when we ask those questions, they do. Oh, finally someone understands where I am. Oh, what a relief. Walls come down. There's no more need for hate and suspicion. We're now a safe place. Can you just feel it? Oh, and all that cooperation and productivity can flood out. The tool we do that with is our life experiences, our empathy, and our intuition, which is just our inner sense of knowing. It's that little voice that says, here's the question to ask. See, when you're stepping into people's world, you can't script it. But you do have to be in touch with your soul, your intuition, and trust it. So empathy, intuition. So we all have a wall. Walls are taken down by empathy, intuition, and by using correct principles. So I'm going to give those to you now. We're going to start with principle number one of a process called intrinsic validation. Intrinsic means the pricelessness, the uniqueness, the depth of the value of a human being. We're going to go into that space and validate them. And we actually do it not by giving them gifts, not by giving them money, not by giving them hugs or kisses. We're going to do it by honoring their right to be right where they are without needing to fix them. We're going to listen. We're going to listen. That's the gift. The gift is we care enough to listen. Well, we start by noticing this person. Most of us have been running around focused on ourselves, and our relationship with everyone else is in relationship to how they feel about us. And we're going to start the process of taking us out of the equation, because it never was about us. It never is about us. And we do that by noticing what's important to that person, what's important to them. This can be hard to do. Og talks about this in Scroll 2, because sometimes it's easy to scratch for gossip instead of digging for compliments. Sometimes it's really hard to find, because sometimes it's because we're so focused on ourselves. And sometimes it's just hard to see. So we're looking at this person. So imagine a person in front of you. You want to find something that's important to them. In the material, I shared several stories. I shared the story of the tattoos, something that happened at one of our couples retreats, where a gentleman had three crosses on his forearms, on both forearms, three on his chest and three on his back. We had seen him climb in and out of the jacuzzi. We knew they were there. We stepped into his world and asked him to tell us about them. And he shared his preparation to go to Iraq. And he says, Father, Son, Holy Ghost, I want them where I can see them. I want them guarding my chest and guarding my back. And going back 9 months later, and going into the tattoo parlor and having them reinforced, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. As this young man opened up and shared from his heart, there wasn't, I don't think, a dry eye in the room. It was moving. Somebody had noticed from a young man who had hardly said a word in 2 days what was important to him. Can we notice the waitress, the waiter? Can we notice the bank teller? Do we notice people? We sometimes see things and we rarely say them. So principle number two is when we see it, we actually verbalize it. Because we go from not noticing to noticing and not speaking to actually verbalizing. That's what we want to be able to do. So this week, you want to start noticing what's important to other people. What's important? It's very interesting when you actually do it. When you notice what's important. I watched somebody do something this week. And, gosh, I don't know if she's on the phone. Crystal, are you with us tonight? She may not be with us, but if she isn't, I'll tell you what happened.
Hi, Dave. I'm right here.
Hi there, Crystal. Would you share with everybody what happened at the restaurant the other night when you were here in town?
Oh, okay. That was a neat thing. We were tired from working all day, and we went to the restaurant, and I was going up to the salad bar, and this older gentleman, probably in his 70s, was walking past me, and he just, you know, didn't really stand out or anything, but I passed him twice, and I just thought to myself, wow. And he was sitting sort of across from us, kind of on the other side, and I just got up, and I went over and talked to him for a minute, and he just really opened up, and I can't remember the rest of it. I think did he come over to the table, or?
And Crystal, I think he was about 85.
Oh, okay.
He could hardly walk. Yeah, Crystal walked over, put her arm on him, and just asked him how he was doing, and just, he smiled because he was by himself. And she invited him to come over.
I just said, what are you doing eating over here by yourself, you know, kind of jokingly about, sort of like that. And he just lit all up and everything, and it was a really neat thing. He came over and ended up bringing his dessert over and talking to us and sitting down, and I think he was a retired OBGYN.
Crystal talked stepped about, into his world and asked him what he did, and he lit up and talked about, they were funny. These Ramona and Crystal were asking him about, you know, like jokes that guys can't say, you know, about OBGYNs, and so that was kind of cute, and he smiled and was just having the time of his life. Well, tell him what happened after he had this moment of feeling, when you're 85 years old, and it looks probably his wife's probably passed away. Would you agree with that, Crystal?
Yeah, because he was there by himself, and I just...
himself, lonely, you know, probably hardly says a word to anybody during the course of the day, and all of a sudden there's two wonderful ladies and me, and we're all having this conversation with him. We're asking him questions, and he's talking, and he had trouble talking. His voice was really having a hard time speaking. It wasn't like it was painful. It just, it's like he doesn't do it very often.
Right.
Yeah. After he left?
Yeah, and then I was putting hands on him. You know, I was just touching his shoulder and, you know, kind of just, you know, rubbing his arm a little bit, and then I took my fingers and clasped them in between his, so we were like holding hands, and he was just, I just tell that the more I touched him, the more we talked to him, the more excited he was. Well, he ended up leaving, and then all of a sudden about 15 minutes later he came back and I said, did something happen? And I walked over to talk to him because he talked really softly, and he said, yes, you excited me so much. He said, I forgot to leave the tip. So he left a dollar and a quarter on the table, and, you know, we held each other again a little bit, and he said a couple more words, and then off he went. It was very precious, really was.
What's interesting, he'd probably just about driven home. He was
It was quite a long time.
Yeah, it was quite a long time. He comes back, his big grin on his face. Here's a man who, for a lifetime, was honored as a physician, who's now retired. I don't know where he's living, but it's probably alone. He could still drive, even though he could barely walk. And he just had the lift. Can you imagine how he felt that night when he's going to sleep, Crystal?
Yeah, I thought that was really neat. I remember that I asked him because I think it was raining or something. And when he came back, I said, "Are you driving or did you walk here? Because do you need a ride home like that?" You know, and he said, "Oh no, I'm driving like that." And the whole thing was just really precious. It just was.
So the question for us, thank you, Crystal.
You're welcome.
What's this week? Let's look for those kinds of opportunities. Now, I know because of Crystal's work, she's going to notice some of those things. And you know, I was thinking about it after. How many people like that have I seen and smiled and waved or something, but didn't get out of my seat and go say hi? What's wrong with that? How about this week, all of us make a commitment that when we're out with people, or we're at home with our own children or spouses or friends or wherever we might be, let us notice, let us see. You see the person who's feeling a little despondent, and maybe we go sit by them for a moment and just be with them. And how you doing? And just lean in and be there with them. We're going to start by seeing what's important to a person. This was a very lonely man, and seeing how important it was for him to have human interaction and a little human touch, and being able to provide that gift to somebody so they could go home feeling better about themselves. This is what the first two principles are about, seeing this and doing something about it, actually saying something, doing something. So let us practice this. It's interesting that quite often these two first principles are kind of overlooked. It's like, oh yeah, I do that. Let's get on to the really big stuff, Dave. And the truth of the matter is we don't. We really don't. Not unless we have an ulterior motive or we have something to gain by it. I might tell you, for those of you who are in a business where you do a 3-foot rule, which means you talk to people within 3 feet, and you're in the business where you prospect and you bring people into your business, this is how you do a 3-foot rule. You don't throw up all over somebody's wall about your business. You don't throw up all about what your agenda is. You actually care about people. You do what Dan McCormick says, one of my friends who's a very successful networker. You're making friends all the time, just making friends. And not with an ulterior motive or an agenda, just making friends. So you're standing next to someone, you can let go of your fear of how you're going to bring up your business or how you're going to talk to them about what you sell or whatever it might be. You can let all that go. No fear at all. Because all you're going to do is look for something that's important to that person. It might be a necklace you notice or the way they're handling a child. It could be whatever. And genuinely noticing it and commenting on it and beginning a conversation. And when you begin a conversation, it's pretty normal to say, "Well, what do you do?" "Oh, I do this." "Oh, what do you like best about that? How long have you been doing it?" "Great." You just let it hang. I can tell you that most of the time, if you're talking to the right person, they'll reciprocate. "Well, what do you do?" Well, you better be prepared with about a one-sentence answer and a question. "I do X, Y, Z." Back to you. And you step back into their world. You'll find you'll create wonderful friendships without having to say anything other than one or two lines about your business. And you'll find out whether or not someone like that might even be interested in what you're doing. "Oh, tell me more about what you're doing." "Well, how about if I get your phone number and I'll call you tomorrow and I'll give you the whole scoop? That'll be great." And you walk away with a phone number and you feel good because you didn't hammer on somebody, you didn't throw up on somebody, you didn't use some technique, you know, of some kind. You just cared about them. You noticed what was important to them. And you verbalize it. You struck up a conversation with another human being. What a great thing. No fear required. Because there is no agenda. As we move into principle number 3. So one is looking for what's important. And two is verbalizing it. we go into the third step of intrinsic validation. And we discover that if we're going to really honor people, we can't have an agenda. There's no agenda. We can't have any baggage, which is our need to be right or our need to fix. Can't have it. It's got to go away. We have to leave these two bags. So if you can imagine, picture in your mind, a suitcase in your right hand, and there's a big label on it that says, agenda. In your left-hand side, there's a big suitcase, and it says on it, baggage. And you're walking up to somebody's wall, and this particular principle is, I'm going to start listening for a door. Start listening for a door. That's a verbal hint about what's going on behind that wall. When a door opens, we consciously set our agenda down on the right-hand side, our baggage down on the left-hand side, and we're going to walk through that door and into somebody's world. And we are leaving the baggage and agenda outside. Now, so that you understand this a little better, human beings have a tendency to telescope what they're thinking, what they're really thinking. You know, I'm having a rough day. How many of us respond? Me too. I know I do at times. What would happen if we said, oh, tell me more about your day? That's a door. The most difficult doors we ever deal with. And, oh, man, this is a tough one for me. I wonder if it's a tough one for you. It's when someone is really caustic, really hurtful, and they're attacking. You ever had somebody do that to you? You ever got into an argument with a spouse or with a child, with a friend, with a business partner, and something is said that just lights you on fire? If you've got the strength in that moment to recognize it for what it is, it's just a door, to help us better understand what's going behind the person, if we can, boy, it's hard. We get to say, well, tell me more about that. Share with me what you're thinking. So if it's caustic, it's hard. If it's friendly, it's a little easier. But it's a verbal hint about what someone is thinking. And sometimes it can be really rough. Sometimes it's just you sit down with someone and you're listening for a door. Oh, it's just been really a rough day. Most of us go into, it's been a rough one for me too. And we just cut them off. Now, we're going to hear that as a door. If we want to share anything, we got to get this wall down. We've got to get the wall down. And the way we get into that place is to get through a door. Well, we share again the words, tell me more about that. Or share with me what you're thinking. Now, those are the ones I'm comfortable with. You can be, I'm listening. It could be that simple. I'm listening. Just leaning into a conversation. And all of a sudden, you're led into the foyer, if you will, of the person's world. You're not yet in the house. You're just kind of in the foyer. And so we go in, and now we're in their world a little bit, just a little bit. And now we just listen for another door. I like to take notes if I'm conscious in doing this. And when you find a door, and then you can say to the person, you don't have to step in every door as it's delivered. You can go back and say, a few minutes ago, you mentioned this. Could you tell me more about that? Wow. I can tell you, just as soon as you say, tell me more about that, you're in rarefied territory. Rarefied territory. Very few people ever go here with another human being. So we step into this place, and we begin to listen. We're not trying to sell anything, not trying to share our opinion. Our mission is to really understand what's happening. We're inside their world. Principle number four is to stay there. Stay there until we've created a safe place. Whew. I'm just struggling a bit tonight. hard thing to do in some circumstances. And I've had some in the last couple of days where I didn't do this very well. I'm very conscious of the fact that I need to share with you tonight. I just need to be really candid with you as I do. There are times when this doesn't work for us. I mean, it always works, but we're not aware enough to really handle it. So I'm pleading with all of us to be a little bit more hypervigilant stepping into someone's world. Because we want to be a soft down pillow in which a person can land and be okay. And I can tell you in this world, we can do it for a little while, but as soon as we start to fix or we've got to keep jumping in and saying something, it's gonna throw that wall up really quickly. We're going to get thrown back out in the front yard. But our goal is to stay there until the wall comes down. And now we can move on to the other principles. Now next week, we're going to talk about stepping into someone's world and trying on their dream. This is a very weird concept for some people to understand. But, oh, if we can actually do this one, I'll share it with you next week. I want you to listen to it this week. It's in the second part of intrinsic validation. Then we're going to talk about timing. Is it the right time to share? Then we're going to talk about gaining agreement and actually sharing ideas that could bless another person's life if it's appropriate at the right time. But here's a subtle piece I want to share with you in conclusion tonight before we open up the lines for people to share. When we care enough to notice another person, in just the caring to notice, we unleash a power that's greater than ourselves. We begin to awaken our own divine nature, something deep in our soul that's precious and warm and wonderful, our true nature as a human being. It begins to awaken. When that awakens, we begin to recognize there's something that's happening that's greater than us. We begin to experience what we call partnership. Partnership with a power greater than ourselves. For me, that's God. I believe that God's mission is to bring abundance and joy and peace to people. And when I am stepping into another world and seeing them through the eyes of agape love, the way God would see them, I am now looking upon them the way He looks upon them. I say He because that's my belief. And I'm now congruent with His mission. We're now in partnership to bless the lives of people. In the weeks to come, we'll talk about what happens when the power of that partnership is put into place. But just see if you can't feel it this week. When you notice someone, notice that person sitting across the restaurant like that, lonely, old, by themselves. Can you see them? Can you say something? Can you notice that clerk? Can you notice that coworker, that employee? Can you notice? Can you verbalize? Because once we make that decision, something starts to change in our own heart. This is why Og says this is the greatest secret of success in all ventures. Something beyond this planet begins to happen in our soul. People just don't go here. You see, they would say, well, why should I care about people? I'm here to win. I'm here to accumulate wealth. Well, yeah, maybe so. And they also end up doing it by themselves, and they make it so much harder than it needs to be. The easiest way to create wealth is in partnership with a power that created an earth. That's a pretty cool partner. And the very first step we take to get that partner is to focus on someone other than ourselves. So we're now focusing on that person. And as we do, and as we serve, and as we step into their world, and as their walls start to come down, and we start to feel their cooperation and productivity flooding over us, we also are having something wake up inside of us, our divine worth, which has another name. It's called self-esteem. We begin to esteem our true self, our divine worth. This is a wonderful way to heal self-esteem. Now, if you've been through this process with us, you know we just finished self-esteem. And when we get back to self-esteem, we're going to visit back to intrinsic validation as one of the great cures of self-esteem. You have some fears and doubts and discouragement about yourself, you'll never get the answers focusing on yourself. You engage in intrinsic validation, and you watch the miracle of self-esteem happen. And the joy that comes from the cooperation of productivity flooding out. And you start to see that this principle has something beyond just intellectual discussion. See if you can't feel it this week. Now, we've got about 10 minutes. I'd like to open this up to anyone else who's had an experience where they have noticed something important and verbalized it, or stepped into somebody's world, someone who's been working on this program and these principles, or any questions about what's been shared so far. The floor is yours. Who would like to come out first?
Hi, Dave. It's Nicole.
Hi, Nicole.
How are you?
I am doing so well, Nicole.
Good.
Good to hear your voice.
Nice to hear your voice. I have a question, and it's regarding connecting with people versus urgency. And as you know, I'm in network marketing.
Yes.
And I feel that I've been lacking in the urgency of sharing with others my products and services. But yet, on the flip side of that, I'm using these principles, and I feel that it takes me a little longer to get into their world, and so then, you know, my leaders are saying, well, you need to push forward a little quicker. You need to give them some urgency and explain to them why they, you know, should be looking at this now. And it's not sitting well with me.
When you actually go out and talk to people with urgency, who's the urgency all about?
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to criticize any leaders because you've got great leaders in your company.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are pretty good at muscle can split a shield and even destroy life. Some of them actually can do that and do it effectively. The question is, how hard is it to replicate that kind of behavior? That's a tough question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, the tough question. Some people can go and just overwhelm somebody with enthusiasm and urgency and get them to sign up.
Yeah.
What I'd like to know, and I do know the answer, is how many of those people who can succumb to that kind of an approach, who would succumb. I would never. I'd be offended by it. And most great people are. They end up often recruiting a lot of people who are incapable of duplicating that effort.
Oh, that's it. You just said it right there.
Didn't I? Yeah.
Yeah, you just said it. There's my answer.
So we get lots of people signing up, and you can get commissions from buying products up front, and you've got some products they can buy and generate commissions. Wonderful. But long-term, are you blessing their lives? Do they know how to duplicate? I'll tell you what. You spend a little bit longer with someone, and you show them how they can love somebody into this business. Really love them into the business.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be in the business, they'll love the business, and they'll be able to replicate that behavior, because 98% of the people attracted to network marketing
mm-hmm.
have very high levels of empathy. Very high levels of empathy. Which means they can't break down the wall with a sledgehammer. It would be offensive to them to do so. And when they try to do it the way they're often told in some of the companies, they just want to come home. They feel icky.
Yeah.
They want to take a shower. Ugh, can't do that. Well, some people can. It just doesn't bother them. Well, if 98% of the people have high empathy and 2% can be hammers, which direction do you think we ought to be teaching? Hammer or love?
Yeah, love.
Love.
It's all about the love.
It's all about the love. If you want the 98% to survive, if you keep wanting to have a 1% to 2% success rate, we can all keep hammering. That's a challenge with the industry in general. I don't mind saying it publicly. It's one of the challenges with the industry. Quite often, those who have initial success are hammers. And so they think they need to teach everybody to be a hammer, and 98% keep leaving. They keep saying, we're looking for leaders. Does that mean you're looking for hammers, or are you looking for people who love? You've got some people up in your area. John and Sue Oldham, you know them?
Mm-hmm. They're in my area.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You watch them love people.
Mm-hmm.
You see what's happened to their organization. They're one of the fastest growing in your company.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why. They love people. That doesn't mean we don't have urgency. That doesn't mean we don't make commitments. That doesn't mean we don't get people to sign up and cut checks and pull out credit cards. That's really not the issue. But the issue is, as we begin to understand the difference between the safe place and then trying on their dream. Oh, I can't wait till next week, Nicole, when we walk through that dream of the sailboat in the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do my very best to help you understand, because I know Dan McCormick. He shows up knowing that what he's about to present will really bless their life. And they know it. They can feel it. He doesn't have to have the bravado.
Yeah.
He doesn't need it. He doesn't need the urgency and the forcefulness. They can feel it in his being that he absolutely, the core of his soul, believes he's going to bless their lives. And he attracts some really interesting people to his organization, like Gary Ritter's. Of the world. Yeah. Pretty amazing, huh?
Very amazing. Thank you very much. You answered it all very beautifully. Thank you, Dave.
Oh, you're welcome. I kind of got on a soapbox, too, didn't I?
No, it was excellent.
Oh, if we could trust this. Oh, if we could trust this. Oh, can you imagine what could be built? Oh. Anyone else who can come out tonight? Yes.
This is Corrine.
Hi, Corrine. How are you?
Hi. I am great. And it was interesting. I was a little bit late getting on this call because I did something. I sent someone that I noticed. He's always organizing reunions and different societies, and he spends so much time getting people together and putting together some quality programs. And I just said one little sentence. I emailed to him. I said, I won't say his name, but I said, you are such a caring organizer. It shows in all the time you take to get people together and to put quality and memorable things together, and I wish that I could be there because I know it's going to be great. Well, he called me just before the call. This man has a database of I can't tell you how many people, and I didn't do it with an agenda. I just noticed, but I recognized that this could be a very important network for me. It may not be, and quite frankly, it doesn't matter if it does or not, because one of my things that I realized is that I needed to put him together with someone else that enjoys doing what he does and is actually doing it as a business. So, because he mentioned, yeah, my wife said if I could just make money doing this, I said, oh, you need to meet so-and-so. And it was, now I have to tell you the rest of the story, just this real quick. I dated this man in high school. He was my first love, and I have not talked to him in years, but have kind of, you know, every once in a while we'll email, and he'll keep me in touch with the things that he's organizing. And I got this call, and we had a delightful conversation. So I really appreciate what you've said, and I'm so excited about it. I have a fairly easy time of verbalizing what I notice about people, and but as I'm doing it now, maybe consciously and unconsciously more, I'm just seeing rewards right and left.
Thank you for sharing, because that's that's the principle. When you show up for someone and you step into their world, and it turns out they call you back, and they ask you what you're doing and why you can't be there, and then you tell them why, and then you find out, oh, my goodness, and you got a huge database, and how can I serve you, and all the walls have come down, the cooperation and productivity is flooding out, and you're seeing literally the impact of this kind of a thing.
That's exactly what happened.
You can feel it.
Yeah. It's exactly what happened.
Can't be there. Well, I'm getting trained to be a coach with Og Mandino.
That's exactly what happened. And I said, have you ever read The Greatest Salesman in the World? He said, of course. And that went on to, you know, more his questions. And I sent him to the Intentional Creation website. And there wasn't any selling involved. Just see what you think, you know.
That's conversation. That's how conversations are supposed to happen. They won't always happen that way. But this I can tell you, everyone listening, the more conscious you are in this space, the more conscious you are in this space, the more your partner can put people on your path who can serve you and who you can serve, because it can trust that you will actually open your mouth. What good does it do to put somebody on your path if you just don't notice it? What good does it do? So the more we do this in times where it just was a good friend, a new relationship, and an old man that was blessed by a warm touch, just more of that, and all of a sudden that partner can trust you and they'll put somebody on your path who can truly bless your life. It's just the way it works. So have fun with this. This isn't about speed, and thank you so much for your comment, Nicole. It's not about speed. But I'll end with this comment. It's in the material. I remember a friend who I felt inspired to call, and I called him, asked him how he was, and he said, I'm fine. I said, then why am I impressed to call you? And he told me his story, and it was unbelievable. Now, I knew part of the pain because it was financial, partially. And when he got done, I asked him one question. How seriously are you considering suicide? It didn't take long to get in his world. And as you practice this, you can do it quicker and quicker with time. You'll become more skilled at stepping in and asking really good intuitive questions. He simply responded, it's all I'm thinking about. We were together the next day to work through that challenge. He now is having an amazing life. That was just a small piece of it. Other people came into his life and blessed other family members, and just miracles happened. But, oh, to be honored to be a piece of that at that moment in time.
Dave,
let
one
us all
more.
Be more.
Oops,
go ahead,
sorry.
Corinne.
Well, just one more comment. What I was surprised about was that probably this man needed that encouragement today, which I never would have guessed about this particular very successful person. So it was a blessing.
I'm not laughing because it's funny, Corinne. Isn't it interesting?
I know.
We see this successful person.
Uh-huh.
Why would they ever need intrinsic validation? They're
duh.
They're okay. Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Just me and my mess, wallowing in my crap. I'm the one who needs it. You know, all of us are thinking that. Well, heck, they're in their own set of crap. Everyone is. Yeah. So you get inspired to do something today. You're absolutely right. When your heart's open, you'll end up saying the right thing at the very right moment to bless a life. Thank you for adding that. That's really an important piece. Well, thanks, everybody. Let's have some fun with this week. And let's come back next week. The very first thing we're going to want to do is share a little bit about what's happening with your experiences. Then we'll go through the rest of the principles of intrinsic validation. Did I hear somebody else want to make a comment? I thought I heard a male voice. Just want to make sure we don't miss somebody. Okay, great. Well, everybody have a wonderful week, and take this on. If you've got any questions, I would go back and re-listen to the audio. Your scroll for the week is scroll number 2. I'll greet this day with love in my heart. Remember, it's agape love. When Og wrote all of these scrolls in one night, this is the only one Betty made him rewrite. It was too complex for 1968. Let us add the complexity back. Agape love, a heightened level of awareness, the greatest secret of success in all ventures. Let's see if we can't start applying it more effectively as we go through this week. Thanks, everybody, and have a great night. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Dave.